I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Pelotazo arriba que la toca Dani Carvajal, cae para Gaby, creo que estaba así, en fuera de juego.
Uy,
y no puede, Gaby no puede, la rodilla derecha, ojo, la rodilla derecha, eso no tiene buena pinta.
Welcome along to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Rory Barlow. I'm joined by Paco Pollitt, and we'll be honest here, the morale is pretty low after Spain did win their last European qualifier 3-1, made it 2-3-1 wins, one over Cyprus first on last Thursday and one over Georgia on Sunday night. But Paco, I'll ask how you are, but the big news here has to be a huge injury to Gavi.
Yeah, obviously the feeling of everyone, not only from La Liga Lowdown team, but I guess most of the Spanish fan bases, that the price was too high for tonight's win, because Gavi's injury might be crucial in the bad way, obviously, for Spain's interests regarding the Euro 2024, and obviously Barca fans out there might be at this point, you know, sorrowing for what has happened, because Barca are bound to lose one of their most important players for, I would say, at least half a year, 6 months is more or less the standard time of recovery. It can become, you know, even more. It could be coming even less, even though it's not really recommended by the doctors, but yeah, obviously whenever there's this kind of injury and it happens to such a young player, the signs of our worries are clear, because we've seen obviously what happens with such a player, such a young player, with critical injuries in his knees. The best example at this point comes to mind, Ansu Fati. Remember that he was like the brightest star for Barca's academy, you know, coming up into the first team, slotting right in, becoming one of the stars of the side, number 10 and so on, and knee injuries in some sense kneecapped his progression, and you know, he has never been the same. So let's hope for the best in Gavi's case. At this point, when we're recording this, there's no official statement backing up the first signs of the injury. But everyone is already talking about a torn ACL. So, yeah, not the best night. Even though Spain were able to win the 3 points and become the overall leaders of their group, but as I said earlier, the price of this win was too high.
Yeah, and I mean, there's been some kind of blame in De La Fuente. I mean, Gavi played 90 minutes against Cyprus, and then again started this game, and he came off after about 27 minutes, I think it is. He's landing, and he essentially is. You could see his knee just kind of spasms, and it's gone. And yeah, it's just a really hard one to take. I mean, this is a guy who's 19. He was playing the best football of his career, I think, for Barcelona this season. He's been hands down with Frenkie de Jong their best midfielder. You look at that, the kind of players that are in that midfield, the likes of Ilkay Gundogan hasn't looked nearly as good as Gavi in a dysfunctional team, which just tells you how well he's been doing. And the blow is huge for Barcelona. I mean, now you're down to De Jong, Gundogan, Oriol Romeu, obviously, and Pedri, and those are your kind of midfield options. They're going to be turning to the academy again. And for Spain, I mean, if there's been one constant in this midfield for Luis de la Fuente, it's been Rodri and Gavi have been the two that have kind of really cemented their places in recent weeks. Recent kind of international breaks. So yeah, it is a massive blow, and it does look like he will be out of the Euros. And it's hard to really sum up the impact of this, but it could be season changing for Barcelona. And we'll come on in the second half of the show to Real Madrid's injuries. We'll talk a little bit about some good news for Barcelona too, and a little bit of Real Betis. But yeah, it does feel for me as if this international break has the potential to really kind of alter the course of the season for both Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Yeah, it can become a season changer for both sides, and now the battle begins, or the race begins to find a replacement, a reliable replacement for Gavi in Spain's midfield. I think that De La Fuente isn't going to have the best experience at trying to do this, because Gavi might be one of the few irreplaceable players in his squad. I'm thinking about maybe Gavi, Rodri, obviously, alongside him in the midfield, and I would say that's it. At the end of the day, most of the... And Pedri, obviously, who has had his fair share of physical issues. The rest of the squad, more or less, is quite flexible on players, positions, forms, obviously. But as far as De La Fuente was in charge, at the helm in the last 6 months, 7 months, Gavi and Rodri were irreplaceable, and suddenly he's lost 50% of his keystones in the midfield. So I think it's going to be tricky to find that kind of profile. Obviously, as you know, I'm surrounded by Valencia fans. Many were claiming towards players like Javi Guerra, obviously Pepelu, who is having a quite notable season over in Valencia. But leaving those names aside, I think it's going to be tough to find someone who is able to fill in properly Gavi's shoes. And yeah, as you said, if Xavi had been complaining the last few weeks for a number of issues, a range of different issues which are plaguing his side, Barca not playing well and so on, and the press and the pressure and so on, I think that losing Gavi is going to make his job even tougher in the following months, because it was obviously one of his most played individuals, and one of the pillars, you could say, of Barca, who haven't been brilliant so far this season and are going to have a tough time in the following weeks and in the following months.
Yeah, and De La Fuente, rather unfortunately, the day before, had said the kind of the best players, they play every week, they never rest. And that's going to be a quote that's no doubt thrown at him in the post-match. I mean, we're still kind of waiting for that to filter through. But yeah, depressing times. I mean, if there is any positives to take, or if there's anything to look at, Spain did top their group. They beat Georgia 3-1 on the Sunday night, and it was pretty comfortable in the end. Lionel Mann's put them ahead very early. Kvaratskhelia equalised after 10 minutes, and in the second half, Ferran Torres scored before Lokoshvili own goal made it 3-1 and pretty comfortable. I don't know if there's really much from my point of view to take from those two games, but in terms of kind of new players, we saw Rodo Riquelme in both games, we saw half of Aleix Garcia, and I thought Alejandro Grimaldo looked pretty good. Was there anything in particular that stood out for you at all, Paco?
Yeah, I was going to speak about Grimaldo, who had a very interesting first half against Georgia tonight, because if you check out, most of Spain's danger being generated happened through the left wing. Both goals came through that way, even though they were finished in the opposite side. And yeah, I think that his society with I think Oyarzabal was playing also in the left, and Zubimendi too. I don't know. I think he seemed quite comfortable playing over there. And yeah, obviously José Luis Gaya was in charge of the assist for Ferran Torres scoring the second goal. Also, Ferran was in charge of scoring once and assisting once tonight. So overall, good game for Shark Ferran Torres. And you know, a set piece being the opener for Spain was a nice change of pace, because it's not exactly one of Spain's strengths at this point. Under Luis Enrique, it was one of the most insisted aspects whenever there was a call for the national side, and whenever they had 10 days working together. I think that Luis Enrique was very keen on trying to work on set pieces and so on. Luis de la Fuente isn't as, you know, doesn't exert so that much pressure on trying to perfect set pieces, and yeah, Ferran Torres being one in charge to take it, and Robin Lenormand with an easy header, you know, almost a tap-in against Georgi Mamardashvili, who once again, alongside Kvaratskhelia, was one of the best Georgian players, Valencia's goalie, because even though he let three in, you know, he was in charge of quite a few saves. He couldn't do anything in the last goal because of a deflection by one of his defenders, as you said, but I don't think that he's going to remember fondly Spain, because he's seen how his goal has been, you know, vanquished 10 times in only 2 games, which is quite a lot, even though I think he's a great goalkeeper. So, yeah, bits and pieces here and there. Oyarzabal, remember, he got the injury against Cyprus. Rodri once again bossing the midfield, quite solid defense, even though you had a couple of you know, very tricky players to mark in front of them for Spain's defense tonight. Carvajal got another cap once again. So yeah, on the football side of things, almost everything were good news for Spain, even though, you know, only 1 point was needed tonight against Georgia. Spain picked up the 3. I think it's more or less a testament to just how solid and consistent the team has been in throughout the 6 games. But as you know, as we said earlier, maybe that Luis de la Fuente quote is going to haunt him further along the road, because losing Gabi in such a game, which is not really that, you know, crucial towards the Spain's future ahead of them, because with a draw was more than enough. I think that the manager isn't going to be happy with both the quote that he said, you know, that he was speaking about before the game, and also because of the outcome and Gabi's injury.
Yeah, just kind of filtering through as we speak, Ferran Torres says it's a bittersweet victory. Gaya says bittersweet as well. Lenormand says he's pissed off and it's a huge blow. And De La Fuente said they'll wait for the tests, but they're very worried. And yeah, it's the most bittersweet victory of his career, that he's experienced in his life. So yeah, it's a tough one, and just kind of it does feel like these kind of situations. I mean, that quote for De La Fuente will be thrown back at him. Obviously, there was the applause for Luis Rubiales before. There was a Scotland game where he came out with some pretty bizarre statements after that match when they were beaten, and it does feel like every now and then he seems to kind of put his foot in his mouth a little bit, De La Fuente, more so with his mouth than his actual coaching. After 10 kind of competitive games in the qualifiers and also with that Nations League victory, what's your kind of general sense of this Spain side? How do you feel about them generally, kind of ahead of the European Cup? Obviously, they'll have a couple of friendlies before they go into it, but where are you on Spain just now before we wrap up the first half of the show?
It might be some sort of unpopular opinion regarding Luis de la Fuente, but I think that his best achievement so far has been coming in and try to not break anything which Luis Enrique built back in the day, and just be a tad bit more defensive. And so far it has worked wonders for Spain, because Luis Enrique's main fatal flaw, in my view, was that Spain has been lacking a true, reliable number 9 since the times of David Villa, Fernando Torres, and so on. And people who succeed, you know, their successors haven't been as proficient in the job of scoring goals in any way. And Morata was Luis Enrique's number nine, and Morata is Luis de la Fuente's number nine, and Morata is having possibly his best season so far as a professional player. And that obviously has translated into a transfer into the performance as Spain's number nine. Also, you have Oyarzabal over there. Also, you have Joselu over there, who has been scoring with Real Madrid. So, in that sense, I think De La Fuente is luckier because his strikers are in better form than Luis Enrique's in the past World Cup. But I would say that Spain tried to follow the same template which was laid out by Luis Enrique, but possibly playing 10 meters behind the usual plays. With Luis Enrique, Spain were pressing very, very high, very, very hard. It was a very physical time for the players. Gavi was super important in the midfield, also Rodri and so on. But under Luis de la Fuente, he has seen, appropriately so, and I think in a positive way, that Spain don't really need to do the same in order to win the games. Maybe when they face, you know, tougher opposition on other challenges, which are better than Cyprus or Georgia or Norway, Spain will find it a bit tougher to you know, crack the egg and score and win the games. But at this point, it's more than enough. You know, we've seen that in all the qualifiers, that Spain have so much firepower and so much quality that even with Haaland in front of them, even with Kvaratskhelia in front of them, it doesn't really matter, because you can rely on Unai Simón and your defenders that ultimately you're going to score at least one more goal than the opposition. Scotland was more or less the asterisk over there, because both games were tough. But overall, I think that De La Fuente has followed the rule of, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And he has only slightly changed the approach, a bit more defensive, and that has benefited overall the not the playstyle maybe, but yes, the results definitely for the team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how De La Fuente does fare against kind of the more, the teams with better weapons, because even those Scotland games, and I think Scotland are an organised, decent enough international side, but they don't have an attacking threat that can really destroy an opponent, with the exception of Scott McTominay. But I will wrap things up there for the first part of the show, and we will do our very best to pick up the tone in the second half of the show. As I say, we're going to discuss Betis, we're going to discuss the Women's Clásico, type of Clásico, given it's not the true Women's Clásico, and of course Real Madrid's injuries as well, who also suffered this international break. So don't go anywhere, we'll be back in just a moment.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It is part two. It's Ruri Barlow. I'm joined by Paco Polit. We've just heard how Spain got on in the European qualifiers. We're now going to switch a little bit more to some of the other international action, but not for the right reasons. And that's because Vinicius Jr. has picked up a relatively serious muscle injury. He's ruptured a thigh muscle. That's going to keep him out for 8 to 10 weeks. So that's going to be middle of January to February that he'll be out, and Camavinga in training as well also picked up a thigh tear, and that's going to keep him out for around, or sorry, a knee tendon tear, which will keep him out for 8 weeks or so. It leaves Real Madrid with a pretty hefty injury list, Paco. I mean, they've now got 9 injuries, and it should be said that those 9 injuries, we do expect Kepa, Bellingham and Ceballos to be back for their next game against Cadiz. All being well, they should be around, but it's still, I mean, you look at Camavinga, Vinicius, obviously Militao and Courtois are out long term. The injuries, Goulart as well is out and kind of indefinitely, we don't expect to see him this year. It's really piling up for Real Madrid, and regardless of how good your squad is, regardless of how rich you are, these players, if you're missing them, they do have a major impact, don't they, Paco?
Yeah, and I think that it's as we say over in Spain, llueve sobre mojado. More or less, it's like adding salt into the wound. You know, it's something that Real Madrid fans have already complained about in the past. Also, Real Madrid as a club, you know, with all of their different tools inside meeting rooms and so on, they have complained plenty of times to both FIFA and the different national teams about many of their players having a big effort being performed when playing at home with their own side, and later increasing the level of input when they play with their national teams, and that ultimately means injuries. And I think that they, as other big sides, we could speak about also Barca, PSG, Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham back in the day, they had a plague of injuries. Also Atletico Madrid, if we speak about Spanish league. Most of them have suffered this kind of transition periods with plenty of injuries coming from assets, which players ultimately are, who are loaned to national squads. And that's why Real Madrid and, to the extent of my knowledge, Florentino Pérez himself are very, very angry with all this issue. Because even though if the different federations pay the teams many times handsomely for the services of their players, it doesn't really outbalance the cost of losing, for example, Vinicius for 3 months. And I totally understand Real Madrid. I totally understand many of the other teams. The big issue here, or the big takeaway, would be if teams really want to solve this, to try and press the issue and try to change to some extent the scheduling calendar throughout the season, because it has been a complaint through and through for the last decade. The players play too many games, and I think that's a fact. And even after rescheduling, I have serious doubts that this problem would be solved. But yeah, as you said, Real Madrid are losing two crucial players till, I would say, mid-January, the beginning weeks of February. Let's see how they face the following games until the Christmas break. But especially as Vinicius had seemed to have been recovered his form, Camavinga has been obviously very important for the team in the midfield throughout the season, and also with, you know, that can secondary consequences, as we have listened to in the last few days, of Luka Modric maybe seeking out further chances to continue playing in other leagues. Everyone knows that he extends his contract yearly every summer, and this season so far he hasn't had those many chances to shine. Other players have subbed him in the and replaced him in the midfield, so losing Camavinga is going to be a big blow, especially for Ancelotti, who is ultimately the guy who has to go in front of the press and complain, and he usually does that very well, about all of this whole FIFA shenanigans. So yeah, unfortunate for Real Madrid, and let's see how Ancelotti is able to put the, you know, the jigsaw back together.
Just on that, I mean, we talk about kind of Real Madrid complaining, and I think both of us are probably, I imagine, I don't want to speak for you, but we probably agree that the scheduling is too heavy and that perhaps the international breaks are demanding a little bit too much, especially for these South American players who have to fly so far, and the African players as well, the Asian ones, the ones that aren't in Europe. The journey time, sometimes, especially the conditions in kind of Colombia, like it could be a very different temperature. It's really, it is hard going on these players who are catching long, long flights. But do Real Madrid have a right to complain? And I'm not going to use the kind of money argument, because obviously they could have bulked out their squads, and we know Carlo Ancelotti is quite good at not complaining about his superiors and essentially saying, you've left me a little bit short, which I think this is going to be a real test of kind of Ancelotti here. But do they have a right to complain when there's going to be four more games added to the Champions League next season, when they're doing a Super Cup in Saudi Arabia with an extra couple of games as well? I mean, these teams are also on board with more games for themselves. So do they have a right to complain, or are they fair game going against FIFA here?
I think that their right to complain is at the same level as potentially Manchester City, PSG, Barca, Bayern, Munich, you know, other top sides within the elite over in European football. I think that ultimately, if you play more games as a club, it usually means that you have done very well in the past season. So you shouldn't really complain about being, you know, the number one contender and playing the Club World Cup. I think that is a prestige tournament ultimately, and playing that and traveling so far, I don't know. I think that anyone who does that needs to be happy about the fact and not sour about, you know, having a couple of more games on their schedule. But I understand maybe that they are not very happy about maybe the Spanish Super Cup having to fly so far away instead of playing it inside Spain. That could be a valid argument. But I think that Real Madrid are correct in their complaints, but not more than other elite sites over in Europe, because more or less you chalk up the number of games ultimately being played at the end of the season, there are not massive differences. If you are a team who thrive and win everything and get to the end of every single tournament, you get to the end of the Copa del Rey, you get to the end in the Champions League and so on, you are expected to be playing about 55, 56 games, which is a lot. And if then you add, you know, the 10, 12, 15 games that, 10, 12 would be the appropriate number that an international player also, has to endure, we're talking about a 65, almost 70 game season, NBA levels here. If you play the full games, all of them, and also the 90 minutes, it's impossible not to be injured. And actually, the case can be pushed forward with Pedri. Remember, he had a season with Barca 2 years ago, and he played all Barca games, all Copa del Rey games, all the Champions League games, also UEFA games. He played for the Spanish national side, for the under-21s, he played the Olympics, and he got injured. And he got injured hard. And that's what happened when you push the human body to the limit. Because as far as, NBA players go, it's true that they have an 92-game regular season, but they have all of the tools available to recover very quickly. They also have, like, private planes going from one point to the other of the USA. And it's just a different kind of sport, and ultimately it's much shorter, the efforts are much more controlled, But football, a 90-minute game, can be grueling on the human body. So Real Madrid have a point. It's not only theirs to tackle. I think that many other sides should do that. I think that was one of the potential excuses back in the day to try to gather together and push forward a European Super League. But once that you know, that point has been shot down, they would should try to unite to other sides. It's going to be tough because they are not, you know, dearly beloved by other national, by other international teams, because precisely of the, of that controversy surrounding the European Super League. But as far as top sides in Europe, they should try to band together to some extent and just sit down with both FIFA and UEFA and the different leagues and just say, okay, this should be, if not stopped, at least controlled to some extent. And we can't have, you know, 55, 60 game seasons for our players. So there should be some sort of limit.
And on kind of Real Madrid, more specifically here, I mean, you say Pedri there. We did kind of talk about Vinicius last season, about how many games that he played. He was basically always in on the in the team and rarely rested until kind of the latter stages of the season. But looking at their squad now, so in terms of fit midfielders, you've got Modric, Ceballos and Valverde to fulfil those kind of three spots behind the front three, if you like, including Bellingham in that three. And then in that kind of attacking area, you've got Rodrigo, Hosolu and Bellingham, and then Brahim Diaz is your only option off the bench. We're probably going to see a bit more of Nico Paz, who's a talented youngster, but yeah, how much of an impact do you see this having on Real Madrid? Because Vinicius has obviously not been quite what he was last season, but if you start taking away those threats and you start asking Rodrigo, Hosolu and Bellingham to be there every game and be the creative force, if you're asking Modric to be putting in kind of 90 to 200 minutes a week, do you think this is going to be a real kind of, do you think we'll see Real Madrid fall off quite a lot here, or do you think they'll be able to manage it?
I don't really think so, because Real Madrid were doing quite well without Vinicius in the first 10 games of the season. You know, Vinicius has only been, you know, close to his real level in the last maybe 3, 4, 5 games, okay? But before, Real Madrid were thriving and winning everything without him. So I think that Real Madrid will be fine. You know, ultimately they will be fine, because it all comes down to the, you know, individual quality of the players, and Real Madrid have that to boot. But yeah, it's true that this is more or less, this should be like a full debate for a full episode here in La Liga Lowdown, because remember, with the pandemic, the football authorities tried to some extent help the sides and the squads with those five subs, and that remained. You know, that was going to be just something like a one shot for a single season, and sides decided that it was positive for the flow of the game, because you allowed more subs in, you allowed fresher legs coming into the pitch, and that also helped teams to rest some of their starters, okay? And you weren't like forced to have at least 6 or 7 of your, or 8 of your starting players to play the full 90 minutes. And at the end of the day, this subtle modification of 5 starts instead of 3 has also helped massive sides and big sides to thrive even more. And it has been very punishing for smaller ones, because if you don't have the means and the money to you know, build a reliable deep squad with 18, 20 players, ultimately the big sides are going always to get the advantage and the edge here, because you keep bringing in with your 5 subs maybe a couple of B-side or youngsters, and Real Madrid get it, like against Valencia only a couple of weeks ago, you get in the second half Luka Modric, Joselu, and so on. And those are not B-side, B-team players. They are like full-fledged starters who don't have the space on the starting 11. And that's why I think that Real Madrid and Barca maybe, and I don't know, other big sides, Atletico, for example, are the perfect example of this. Atletico have a very, very deep squad, like 20 players who could perfectly start any single game, because Simeone really wanted that. Simeone is that kind of school which was born in the early 2000s with Rafa Benitez over here in Valencia, was a master of his craft in this, of rotations, you know. keep rotating your squad every single game. Doesn't matter the opposition, doesn't matter the competition, just keep rotating them in order to keep them fresh when you reach the last 10, 15 games of the season. And having that, Simeone, I think he really knows that if he wants to have his full chances of succeeding when March comes around, he needs 20 players at their top level. And in order to have that, you need to play them as regularly as possible. And in Simeone's case, Athletic's case, having all those subs has benefited them. In the case of the absences, Real Madrid, I think they are going to notice them maybe in cagey games, tight games, where that Vinicius flash, single quality play can make the difference. But in the 90% of them, I think they are going to be just fine.
I think for me, almost like as much as Vinicius is obviously a huge, huge problem, I think lacking Tchouaméni and Camavinga at the same time is going to be an issue too, because you're then going to move one of Toni Kroos or Fede Valverde in there. If you stick Valverde in there, you kind of upset that equilibrium that's allowed Dani Carvajal to be so good. If you put Kroos in there, Kroos isn't quite as defensively astute as kind of some of his other ones. And if, especially if you have Kroos and Modric there, then you're going to have a problem defensively for me. So I think it might... Certainly take a few points off them. And just talking about kind of those smaller sides, I just quickly wanted to touch on Real Betis, who, I mean, we've spoken before about them kind of leaving Pellegrini a little bit short, but right now, I mean, Savali's injured, he should be back before too long, I think, but you've got Bellerin there at right back, Abner Vinicius and Juan Miranda at left back. Juan Miranda could be moving on in January because he's out of contract. It looks as if he wants to leave either next summer or in January. I think Dortmund and Milan have both been mentioned. They obviously brought in Sokratis, who's come in on a free, but has not played much. Chadi Riad, who came in from Barcelona this summer, is still only 20, and he's come in. He's not available for the Europa League. He's not registered yet. But he could be away to the African Cup of Nations as well. Bartra should be back before that happens, but German Petzela and Bellerin, Miranda, Abner, they basically only have kind of four defenders that they can rely on in every match right now. I wonder about those big teams as well. Real Madrid kind of leaving Ancelotti a little bit short up front. I think Barcelona left Xavi a little bit shorter in terms of getting Cancelo and Felix in and weakening the squad that way. Are they leaving Pellegrini a little bit too thin? Are we going to, again, see that? Because look at Girona, Real Sociedad. I mean, you've got Athletic Club who are not playing European football. The competition for those Europa League places is more alive for me this season than it was last.
Yeah, in Pellegrini's case, you know, we're having an example of every punishment that a manager can really endure. As you said, Ancelotti with problems in the front, some other teams with some players missing in the midfield, as for example Real Madrid, and in the, Pellegrini's case, he has had his defense rudely manhandled throughout the competition. I think that it's a perfect example of bad luck. You know, ultimately, when you get so many injuries in those specific positions at the back, you just can't really blame a specific reason, because it's just a case of, I wouldn't say bad planning, because ultimately you have made like the bullet point list of up to six players. If you get five, six players out in your defending area, that's just too bad for the manager. It's unlucky. He will have to deal with that, you know, trying to reconvert other players from other specific positions, trying to, you know, give advantages and chances to some, you know, youth academy players or B team players, because that's just the way it is. Back in the day, Valencia used to do that. You might remember in the midfield in past seasons before they signed Pepelu and Javi Guerra came up through the ranks, but I totally understand how Pellegrini must be feeling and how frustrated he must be feeling, because as you said, this year is going to be very tight in the race for the European spots. And if you, you know, if you fail to deliver in two, three specific games, that might be very punishing at the end of the year, you know, because as you said, many contenders are there with the different spots up for grabs. Girona at this point have been mighty, and I seriously doubt that they miss on the shot of qualifying for the Champions League. I seriously doubt that, because the fall, the drop should be very acute, and I think that their management have the resources to, in case of a drop, for example, coming before January, they would be able to bring in a couple of players to once again strengthen the squad. I think that Mitchell has that kind of, you know, attitude or mentality. When he really sees something that doesn't work, he will be trying to solve it as quickly as possible. So Girona will drop eventually, but the drop is not going to be dramatic. And that's why at this point, with all of the points amassed so far, they have, I would say, 60% of the job done in order to qualify for Champions League, which would be obviously history in the making, you know, absolutely massive for the team. And then you have the other two spots and so many contenders over there, because you have talked about Athletic Club doing a good season, Always Betis, you know, lurking behind the bushes, waiting to take their shot at that fifth or sixth spot, Real Sociedad, obviously. Even they have started so badly this season, I wouldn't rule out Villarreal, because of, obviously, the squad that they have, Gerard Moreno in front and Marcelino in the sidelines. And yeah, we can have a couple of, you know, surprises over there. So it's going to be very interesting to see that battle in the following months and in the following weeks. And towards that scrap, it's, you know, very unlucky, as I said earlier, everything that's going on over at Sevilla, over in El Benito Villamarín, in Betis. But yeah, maybe, I don't know, Isco is getting married in order to counterweight that to some extent and bring some sort of joy to the squad, because the rest of the news coming over there are always very painful with injuries and so on.
Yeah, it feels just a little bit harsh for Pellegrino that he's done such a good job over the last 2-3 years, continually getting them into Europe. Obviously, they won the Copa del Rey, but they've not really been allowed to enjoy the fruits of success in terms of more investment, in terms of a deeper squad to tackle those things with. But one to keep an eye on. And just before we finish up, Barcelona did beat Real Madrid one last time this year. Barcelona Femenino won 5-0. They absolutely thumped Real Madrid Femenino at Montjuïc. I think there was just under 40,000 people there. Aidana Bonmatí opened the scoring, Caroline Graham Hansen, Mariona Caldente, and then in stoppage time of the second half, Claudia Pina added a fourth, and Vicky López became the youngest ever scorer in a Barcelona-Real Madrid game. So yeah, pretty impressive stuff. And yeah, you watched this one, didn't you, Paco?
Yeah, I was. Obviously, I'm quite a big fan of women football. I'm not one of the modern ones. You know, I've been watching women football for most of my life, and at this point, it just, even though back in the day, 4 seasons ago, when the deal was struck between Club Deportivo Tacón and Real Madrid in order to absorb the name of the club and become Real Madrid Femenino, even when some of the media over in Madrid, obviously, they were claiming that football was entering a new dimension with Real Madrid having their own women's team, at this point, they are just another different league. You know, Real Madrid are mortal, and Barca are in another tier of football play style, of football level, achievement, quality. The perfect example is to sum up the fourth goal, which wasn't scored by her, but, you know, the play, the run by Aitana Bonmatí was absolutely brilliant. You know, that kind of reminiscence to what Iniesta used to do back in the day, of just dancing around the ball and sending the defender straight into the ground with a dribble, and it was beautiful, especially during the first half, because Barca polished the game in the first half, and all of their goals were both very efficient football wise and also very aesthetically pleasing. The third one went straight into the angle. I don't know. I think that they are Barca are perfecting with their women's side what actually is expected from the men's team. And yeah, in that sense, it won't, you know, sit well with Xavi Hernandez, who has recently had his own qualm with journalists and so on. But the way Barça Femenino play they really tend to adjust to the high standards that Barca fans really have with their teams. Not only winning, but the way of winning is also very relevant. And in this case, since Real Madrid Femenino exists, all of the classical derbies between both sides have toppled over to Barca's favor. And in this case, it also was a joy to watch the way the audience, the fans, the afición, they responded with, as you said, 40,000 people over there in Montjuic, and it was the first time the game was played there, obviously because of all of the wars happening in Camp Nou. But yeah, you know, Barca are marching forward to win once again the league. I would be very surprised if they lost a single point in the full season, a single point or a single game. You know, both of them are correct. And once again, their main issue is going to be the challenge of winning the Champions League, the Women Champions League. Whereas for Real Madrid, they will have to keep working towards try to get the balance of power in at least a balanced position, because at this point it's too unbalanced towards Barca, and I think it's going to be that way for at least a couple of seasons.
Yeah, Barcelona winning 12 straight. They are top of the league in the Liga Efe. 9 games, 9 wins, 39 goals, 2 conceded. Real Madrid, to be fair to them, are still in second place after that. They're joined with Levante and 2 points behind are Atleti. And if you want a little bit more about women's football, if you upgrade and go and see a couple of Lauren McCann's good pieces that she's been writing about Barcelona and Real Madrid and their kind of Champions League campaigns and how that's looking in the group stage, I think we will wrap things up there for now. My thanks to Paco. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you, obviously. And remember, everyone, as Rory said, that you should upgrade to check out all of the pieces, the Substack pieces, written ones, and also the special podcast that every single midweek you can delight to your... perform some kind of delightful listen to your own ears.
Yes, absolutely. We will be back on Thursday. And with that, I will bid you all adios. And we'll see you again on Thursday.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.